Following program is intended for mature audiences.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Let's talk football.
Let's talk football.
One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
Been a lot of complaints already. Bad language, smoking grass.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Been a couple weeks. Got 1 week till the NFL draft. It is the intentional foul, and we are back in the midst of winter, I guess. Are we still here?
I mowed my grass on Saturday.
I saw the lines.
Yeah, I mowed my grass on Saturday, and it snowed Sunday night. What a fucking state do we live in? Come on.
It's a great question. I mean,
I mowed my grass. I had an old jersey on. I was out there in shorts and a tank top.
Getting a little sun.
Sweating, getting a little sun. And then this. I heard they got like a foot up in La Crosse.
Yeah. Because that's where my in-laws live in Onalaska. And she, my sister-in-law texted me when we were eating dinner. She's like, yeah, we already have 5 inches of snow.
Like, unbelievable. What? That's crazy.
Just nuts. When I scheduled our baseball games, I'm like, 5 games? Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? There's no way we're doing all five. Got all five of them.
Yeah, you had a good week to do it.
I don't think we're getting either one this week because it looks deplorable.
Yeah.
Absolutely awful. But we had a good week for baseball, and we're off to a pretty good start. So, all right, so we don't have a rundown. We're just kind of throwing this one together. We'll fly by the seat of our pants. We'll cover some NBA stuff. I don't even know if any. There's one big contract today in the NFL. I had to explain the Aaron Rodgers, New York Jets, Packers front office, where we are right now today, to some people who are not really in the loop on how football goes. And basically I said, right now, everybody's locked in a staring contest. And they're going to see who wants to blink. And their eyes are going to get all bloodshot, and they're going to dry out, but they're going to see who can hold their stare the longest. And they didn't really understand why, but that's kind of where we are right now.
Whose pick is first in the draft, Packers or Jets? Do you remember?
I think the Packers are 15 and the Jets are 17.
Okay.
I think, okay. Or is it 13? Now I got to look.
Because, you know, you got to figure that the Packers are holding out, obviously, for a first-round pick, presumably this year's. Well, so
Goody has said that's not a necessity.
Well, I'm sure it's not a necessity, but it's part of the negotiating tactics, I'm sure. Because you want to get as much as you can for your player.
Yes.
And, you know, just I would find it interesting to see who picks first. And, you know,
Jets are 13, Packers
okay,
are
15. Okay, so the Jets, that decision has to be made by the time the 12th pick is made on draft day.
You would think so.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the window we're in right now. If it doesn't happen then, okay, now we're on to a whole new...
Unless they're on the clock.
New circumstance.
And then you call and they say, all right, here we are. We're going to take this. What are you offering us? And then, okay, don't like the deal. Yeah. We're taking our guy. Click. I don't know.
From everything you're hearing, from what some of the Jets front office people have publicly said in front of their fans about Aaron Rodgers is going to be a Jet, I mean, you've really kind of tied one arm behind your back at this point if you're them, though. And I kind of feel like you have to get it done. I don't know when. I don't know if they feel that urgency before the draft or not to do it. But I would think with, you know, God, we're already to mid-April. You know, I mean, what, the camps for mini camps, what,
well, the
June?
The rookie orientation after the draft is like right after that in May, and then the OTAs and that stuff run into June, and then everybody breaks for a month, month and a half, and then you've got training camp at the end of July.
I mean, yeah, and if you're Aaron Rodgers as the player and you're the Jets as the team, wouldn't you want that marriage to happen as early as possible so you can have that much more time to get on the same page, right?
Is he actually going to show up to stuff to do that, or is part of the deal like, I'm not showing up to anything?
Boy, I don't know.
You would think?
I think Rodgers would be pretty foolish to not take some time to get on,
that's what I
on
think.
Good terms with his receivers and his line. I just have a hard time believing that he wouldn't show up.
But at the same time, what is the track record always? Maybe they've just allowed that for him, and he'd be like, I don't need to do that. These are the same guys.
Right.
I'm going to do what I do. I'm going to show up. They're going to be ready.
We're running this. I know the offense.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe different coach, different guys. Maybe he would feel the more of a necessity to do that. I can see it happening both ways. I really can. But from some of the other stuff I'm reading, is that it doesn't necessarily need to happen before the draft, and there can be a lot of future picks involved because sure. Really nothing needs to happen until Rodgers is due a little bit of money, and that's not until September. But it's like your first games are in the middle of August. So when is he supposed to take over and just show up and take the field with like one or two practices under it? Like
right.
That doesn't make
it doesn't
any
make
sense
any
to
sense.
Me.
No. So you got to figure in the next 6 weeks, something's got to give.
I would think so. Either it's going to happen maybe at the beginning of next week or on draft night. And after that, like you said, it's maybe before the OTAs, certainly before maybe training camp. There's voluntary team activities right now. And, of course, the first picture of the Packers' Twitter account posted was Jordan Love walking into the stadium.
Won't you just be really glad to move on?
I really am.
I mean, and I'm just kind of saying that to the ether to any Packer fan. Like, won't you just be happy to just watch your football team and see if this Jordan Love kid's any good?
Yes.
I mean, it's fun to win. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, when winning becomes like kind of like going to the dentist, it's time to move on. You know,
it's going to make me watch the games in a whole different way.
Well, I think it would just make like the preseason stories a little bit more interesting, too, like because it's new,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the same old shit, same questions, same answers to Rodgers, same questions to the GM and the coach. It's just like we've heard this would be like the fourth year in a row of this.
But now they're going to graduate from what we've heard in the last 2 years, maybe three, about whether Jordan Love's good. How do we know when he's ready? Is he going to be capable of running the offense? To now, is Jordan Love capable of running the offense? Is he ready? It's like,
well, we'll find out.
It's the same questions, but it's a different circumstance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
now
I suppose.
So it's like we've gone from.
Well, that just goes back to the media asking stupid questions. I mean, don't ask questions that you already know the answer to. You already know the answer.
They just want the soundbite. And they're hoping that somebody gives it to them in a different way, nobody does.
If you guys are that stressed for soundbites, you got to get your ad people out there beating the pavement, man. You got to sell more ads.
I don't know.
Hey, Brian, do you think he's ready? No. That's why we traded away our Hall of Famer and put a kid in there, because we don't think he's ready.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think he's going to say?
I don't know. That's a lot of the locker room questions where it's like, well, what did you expect me to say? I don't know.
How did you feel when that shot went in at the buzzer
your
in your face?
To me. What are you feeling?
I felt joy. I was happy that my fucking season was over. Like, what do you want me to say?
Describe to me what you're feeling right now. Yeah, that's right. I did see a report that the Steelers are interested in the Bears.
Yeah, there's been some rumblings about them trading down again, which is interesting. I don't know pick wise. I haven't heard like specifics of what might be in the offering, but I would be okay. But you gotta be careful. You don't want to move too far down,
right?
Because then you end up not being able to get anybody that can impact your team. I still think, you know, just percentages. I still think you want a top 10. 12, 15 pick. All right. If you're gonna trade, if you're at 9 and you're gonna trade down, I don't think you'd want to trade past 14, 15. But, you know, the two guys I keep seeing and hearing about linked to the Bears the most are Jalen Carter,
yep,
and Paris Johnson Jr., the tackle from Ohio State. Okay. And then you got Skronsky in there a little bit too. So maybe the thinking with the Bears is, hey, maybe we trade to 11 or 12. I don't know where Pittsburgh is. Maybe it's somebody else.
But one of those two will be available.
And one of those two linemen might still be there. Maybe that's the possibility.
And then they said the additional compensation would be the pick that the Bears traded for Claypool in the second round.
Sure.
And then we'll get that back.
Sure. Sure.
Which sounds straight out of draft day.
I really don't care about that pick.
Steelers are at 17.
Okay. Yeah, that's a drop. That's a drop. So, I mean, if the Bears are in the mode of we don't feel, unless we can get Jalen Carter at mm-hmm. 9, we don't feel like anybody in the next 8 to 10 picks is like an immediate contributor, and we just want to accumulate as much talent mode as we can, I guess I'd be okay with it. But
and then you get that 32nd pick, the first one of round 2, mm-hmm. back.
You get that back.
So you're picking twice in the first 32 picks.
You know, that pick's nice. You it know, is, it's basically a first rounder. I mean, there's been good guys coming.
Right, exactly. Because there are guys that drop that have that value and that possibility. And then if you'd get that, you'd have 3 total second round picks as well with 53 and also with 61.
I'm at this point right now, I'm kind of okay with whatever the Bears do on draft day. You know, trading out, getting good value, getting future picks, and getting a legitimate target for Fields and DJ Moore, I think was huge. You know, the chance of any wide receiver in the first round this year being better today than DJ Moore is very low, if it happened at all. So I'm cool with it, man. Like, they need depth. They need depth of talent across that roster. And, you know, hopefully they can accumulate that. And, you know, they got some holes to fill, obviously. I'm very interested in the running back position. They've got a lot of guys. They don't really have a guy. And, you know, Bijan Robinson sitting in the right spot for you in the first round there in the late teens, if he were to fall that far, that would be intriguing. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see, man. It's what do we got? A week? Week from
Thursday.
Thursday?
Yep.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens.
Redskins got sold.
Yeah. A guy who owns the New Jersey Devils and then what NBA team? And the Sixers.
Yep. Josh Harris. I don't know what he does, but he must have a lot of money if he owns three
professional
teams.
Franchises.
Or he's got the right friends. But
across 3 different leagues.
Man, they were running through those some of the lowlights of the Daniel Snyder era. Like, they've won 2 playoff games in his entire... He bought the team in 99. They've won 2 playoff games in his entire tenure, and they haven't gotten out of the divisional round at all. I mean, just the ridiculous amount of coaches, general managers.
Oh, the turnover there has been atrocious.
I mean, you had... Obviously, the sexual misconduct thing, you've had the name thing, people forget, this is no fault of Dan Snyder, but forget the Sean Taylor murder that really, that team wasn't a great team, but that team was okay, they were all right. You couple that with Robert Griffin and how they completely botched him when he got hurt that first year. Just one of the worst ownership tenures I can remember.
And I've read that the stadium is a nightmare. Oh. It's awful to get in get out.
Nobody goes. No. Like, all the top is all blocked off. I mean, I don't know if they still do regional blackouts or anything, but they got to be pushing the limit.
I think
they had, like, I think it said when he bought the team, I think they were 4th in attendance, and this past year they were last, something like that. I mean, dude, remember when we were kids? The Joe Gibbs Redskins? Yes. Like, they... The Redskins, the Giants, the Niners, the Bears, like those were the teams in the NFC when we were kids.
Watching ripping in the Super Bowl, for sure.
I mean, those teams were always in the playoffs and won multiple Super Bowls in the 80s and early 90s, and they've just fallen off a cliff.
Bad.
Really bad.
Really bad. And then the other football headline today was Jalen Hurts signing for a shit ton of money.
Kind of had to know.
No trade clause, a lot of guaranteed stuff. But he gets in front of Lamar Jackson, and he gets in. I saw Brant tweeted he gets in front of Burrow, and then he got in front of Herbert, which is going to make signing them a little more difficult as well, because they are going to be due a lot of money as well. So he's going to stay with the Eagle. And his agent is smoking.
I know she is. She's nice. Boy, Lamar Jackson's got to be pissed.
Right?
And I don't know about, I don't know where the guaranteed money is. It was like 250, right, is what the overall package was. I want to say it's
129, 159, 179, something like that.
Yeah. So
I think it's about a little more than half.
I feel like 170 something was, that sounds right. So I don't, you know, Lamar wants fully guaranteed. Jalen Hurts, who just, even though he didn't win, who won the MVP last year? Mahomes?
Yes.
Yeah. But Jalen Hurts easily could have. And he went to the Super Bowl. Look, Lamar's got his MVP, but that's it. So if now if I'm the Ravens or any other team in the league, I'm going, where's your Super Bowl appearance, Lamar? Why would you get guaranteed money?
And
you play less
yep.
than Jalen Hurts, and you've accomplished less, like I said, outside of the MVP year, which Jalen Hurts had basically an MVP year. Just unfortunate that Pat Mahomes is in the league.
Right.
It's not his fault. That's going to be very interesting. And then you get the Ravens sign Odell for the 1 year, $15, $17 million deal. And just, can somebody correct me if I'm wrong? What? When was he good again? Like 2015?
Long.
16?
Long. Even before that.
Like he was a nice piece on the Rams the year they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, playing opposite Cooper Kupp. Okay, he was good. He was a good, solid player for them for 6-8 games. Other than that, that dude has not been good in years. That's a lot of money to pay that dude when you got a quarterback sitting there begging for money. But then it comes out that Lamar told the Ravens, sign Odell and trade for DeAndre Hopkins and we'll talk.
Wow. Okay.
So you want us, we'll talk. Do I still have to give you all the money? Because right. If I go get these guys, something's got to give, right?
But again, the Ravens have done this before. They've given Flacco a ton of money. They couldn't afford to sign anybody else.
Right.
And then they went down the tank and they finally had to get rid of him and eat a lot of it. So they're probably gun-shy of doing this again.
Yeah.
So now at least they got a couple of guys. So if they have to go with option B, at least they have somebody else that can do something.
Well, and I'm happy for Jalen Hurts. He seems like a good guy. He got shit on at Alabama, and he went to Oklahoma and turned himself into a quarterback that was draftable. And then he sat for a little bit, and when he got his opportunity, he's made the most of it. If you want to tell me that he's got a ton of talent around him, fine. That's what you have to win Super Bowls. You got to have talent around you. I'm just happy that hopefully now the media can get a little bit away from this. They don't want to pay Lamar because he's black stuff. Because last I checked, Jalen Hurts is a black quarterback.
I believe so.
And last I checked, Deshaun Watson's a black quarterback with a lot of stuff hanging out there. And those two both got a lot of money. So it's not because Lamar's a black quarterback. It's style of play. It's the, like you said, it's the particular franchise we're talking about who has been burned. So going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And there's another guy. The clock's ticking. Like, I don't believe he's going to sit out. I just don't think you can do that in football.
If he really cares about money, he's going to put it to the test. You know, Watson wasn't given a choice.
Yeah, and he's not been a good player since he's been back.
Nope, and that's if I'm Lamar, I'm watching
that's what
that.
That's what I'm looking at. I mean, of course you're confident in your own skills.
Of course, but it's like, man,
missing a year in football is a long time to miss, especially at that position.
I just don't know why you'd give up a year while you're supposedly
in your prime. Totally.
And then all of a sudden come back and chance that you're not what you were. And the makeup of the team is totally different, and the pressure, to me, is now increased. Where it's like, well, you sat out, we now gave you all this money, go produce. I think you're walking into almost a worse situation than you did when you left.
Well, it's such a volatile sport. Like, you could sit out and get what you want in the long run, and then what? You come back and play two games and get hurt, and you're out for another year, so you'll have played two games in 2 years? Like, and that's football. That could happen.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you're Zion.
Right.
You know, you're just sitting around in street clothes watching your teammates play.
All right. That's it for some NFL stuff. We'll go to the We'll go to the NBA, the playoffs. We got a couple of games tonight. We had four last night. I texted you after the first quarter when the Bucks were down to the Miami Heat. Let's go through the play-in tournament. Did things kind of play out, I guess?
No.
Not play in the way you had one expected or two hoped?
No. I had hoped that Miami would have shown up and take care of business against Atlanta in their 7-8 matchup in the home game, because I wanted Boston to have to deal with Miami, because Miami in the playoffs is a bitch to play. Jimmy Butler is a great playoff player, and Eric Spoelstra is one of the four or five best coaches in the league. So that sucked. I did think the Bulls would beat the Raptors. I was hoping the Bulls would beat Miami, but that I wasn't surprised that Miami won. Out west, Minnesota just completely threw up all over themselves at the end of that Laker game. I mean, they're down two starters. Their best player, Anthony Edwards, goes 3-for-20 from the floor. They don't score in the last 6 minutes until Conley gets fouled with 0.1 seconds left in regulation. And they still had a chance to win the game, and they couldn't do it. So the Lakers go on to the 7 seed to play Memphis, and Oklahoma City beat the Pelicans in the 9-10 and then lost to Minnesota. So Minnesota got the 8. So, yeah.
And Minnesota got destroyed last night against Denver.
Yeah.
Lakers pulled an upset. Morant hurt, and he could miss the next game, re-aggravated an injury that he had to sit out for quite a bit during the year. And then what else happened last night? In addition to the Bucks, what was the other game?
Well, the Clippers.
That's right.
The Clippers beat the Suns. The Clippers were up big. The Suns came back, took the lead, and the Clippers end up winning at the end. I'm really surprised by that. No Paul George, sounds like, for the whole series for the Clippers. And, excuse me, that game in Phoenix. So that's a huge win for the Clippers to get. What I think has been the game so far of the playoffs was Saturday night, Kings Warriors. Awesome game. And if you're a casual NBA fan and you probably haven't seen Sacramento play other than maybe the two times they played the Bucks, check them out. They're fun. And, you know, they got some recognizable names on their team that fans of college basketball over the last few years will know. But De'Aaron Fox is a stud, and he gave Curry all he wanted in that game. And Golden State had a chance to tie. Curry missed a shot at the buzzer.
Yeah,
but
right in the corner.
That's going to be – I think that's a seven-gamer. I really do. I think that one is going to be a long series, and it's going to be a fun series.
I feel bad for Sacramento because they finally – get off the schneid as the playoff drought, and then the reward is a Warriors team, which is, you know, say that they've had a down year, but they're still loaded with talent.
Oh, I mean, that place was absolutely rocking on Saturday night too. I mean, I don't know if you remember when they were good, like when we were in college, when they had Weber and Bibby and Vlade, when they would play the Lakers, they always had them cowbells ringing. Phil Jackson would always get pissed. Yeah, they were out in full force the other night against the Warriors. Man. So that was fun to watch. In the East, Philadelphia handled Brooklyn on Saturday. I think that's going to be a very short series. Boston demolished Atlanta on Saturday. I think that's going to be a short series as well. The 4-5 matchup with the Knicks and Cavs.
New York won that, right?
New York won the first game. I think that's a 7-gamer. Oh. I think that's going to be a long one. I still think Cleveland will win. I'm kind of hoping the Knicks would win. I think it would be a better matchup for the Bucks and an easier matchup. And I would also love to be able to see Giannis get a playoff series in the Garden. I think that would be fun. But let's get to the main event.
Yeah. No kidding.
Bucks lose at home, game one, 131-117 to Miami. Giannis goes out early second quarter with the back injury. I mean, you ask me what you want to ask me and where you want to start, because there's a lot to go over in this game.
Well, I mean, I was talking with Grizz a little bit. He was mad, you know, about there wasn't much talk about, you know, Kevin Love, and that was a dirty foul, that he's been in the league long enough. He should, you know, not do that, and, you know, accusing him of purposely trying to take out a superstar, you know, for his own team's benefit. You had texted me that you couldn't get a call. Miami shot, 59.5% in the game. So, but it always seems like when the Bucks get handled, it's because the opposing team shoots out of their minds. And I had said, I had also read somewhere that the Bucks didn't do very well with their perimeter defense, which if I recall, this was a problem in the playoffs before, that this is not a strength of Bud's scheming, mm-hmm. is defending the outside shots.
Correct.
So it's like, now we're back to this again. Like, that was the first thing I thought of, like, I've heard this before. So why does this keep coming back? Is it personnel? Is it scheme? You could just go with all that and,
all right,
go ahead.
Well, let's start with Grizz.
Yes.
And his comments about Kevin Love and the Giannis play. I would disagree with him.
Fine.
And here's why. I wouldn't call it a dirty play. And I do not blame Kevin Love. And anybody that read anything about Giannis in the last couple weeks when he talked about some of the struggles he's gone through personally over the last few years and how he talked about retiring in 2020, one of the people that he talked to and became very good friends with is Kevin Love. So I don't buy that at all.
Okay.
That there was any malice behind it. But that is the most dangerous play in basketball currently. And the NBA needs to take a really hard look at fixing this. And what has happened, I think we talked about it in the NFL, and we certainly talked about it in baseball. Sometimes when you change one rule, you unintentionally affect a bunch of other stuff, right? So when the NBA, this is just my opinion, when the NBA got rid of hand checking and the game became way more spread out and everybody started shooting threes, it did two things. It shrunk the game down in terms of positional size. So 6'3 point guards didn't have to be 6'3. Now they can be 6'6", 6'1". Your 7'2" center, now he can be 6'10". Okay, so everybody's a little bit smaller. The game is more spread out, and it's more difficult now for a defensive player to recover. If I'm guarding you on the perimeter and you beat me off the dribble, the help now has to come from a lot farther away than it used to. It might be coming from 15 feet away as opposed to 10 feet away like it did in the olden days, back when we were playing. Guys now have been incentivized to run over and stand there and try to take a charge, as opposed to our day where you were incentivized to challenge the shot at the rim. And what has happened is, as the league becomes more and more athletic, you've got guys now jumping off of one foot, attacking the hoop 10 feet away. And if you watch where Giannis takes off from and you watch where Ja takes off from in his game, and this isn't just a Giannis thing, those guys are airborne when the other player is still moving to get into position to take this charge. But the referees, to their credit, they actually called that play a block. But the fact that that play ever gets called a charge is the problem. What's the solution? Well, I think the easy one is you move the charge circle farther out. Because when you're, you know, Kevin Love is almost, he's a foot from being outside the basket. Giannis had damn near landed when he hit Kevin Love. And, you know, when a guy goes up on a fast break layup, if you clobber me, that's a flagrant foul because I'm airborne. Well, what the hell's the difference? If I'm airborne and you slide under me or just bump me, it's the same thing. I'm off balance and I can't brace my fall. So I don't blame Kevin Love. I blame the rule and the unintended consequences of some of the rules that have been changed that have led to this. I think the block charge call is way too prevalent in all levels of basketball. It's the most difficult call for these guys in the striped shirts to make. They're often wrong. I thought there were three calls in the first quarter that should have been offensive fouls on Miami that were called blocking fouls on the Bucks. One of them got Holiday in foul trouble, and the other one pissed Giannis off, and that's why he went barreling down the lane and got clipped by Love and fell on his ass. I just wish, you know, college basketball is the worst defender of this. I mean, the team up the road, they've turned it into an art form. And really, as a former player, what it tells me, guys that take a lot of charges, they can't guard anybody. Kevin Love was like first in the NBA in charges taken. It's because he can't guard anybody. He can't guard his own guy. So what he does is he runs from the backside and just gets in your way and falls down. Badgers have had a lot of guys like that. Boston's got a guy like that in Marcus Smart. And they get away with it. People want to call it crafty or savvy or whatever. That's your prerogative. Fine. But you're telling me you can't guard me. If your out is falling down, I'm sorry. You can't guard me. And I understand Giannis is difficult to guard, but put some big guys in and protect the rim then. I don't know what to tell you, but I just wish that play would kind of get legislated out of the game somehow. And I think, and Mark Cuban even brought it up today, easiest thing to do is to move that charge circle farther out, more towards the free throw line, where now you're not getting guys as much mid-air, you're getting them in their initial takeoff. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you hit me when I'm taking off, I'm only falling a foot as opposed to falling 3 feet. And that's a huge difference. Just getting to the game itself, I was really disappointed with how the Bucks came out.
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up because I told this to Grizz when he and I were talking. And granted, it's 3:30 in the morning and I have one eye open at this point, but you had texted me when your starters, and it was even included in the article that all the starters hadn't played since April 5th. Mm-hmm. So this is another, and it's not by virtue necessarily of a number one seed, because none of the playoffs had started for anybody because the play-in tournament was. So there's a little bit of a difference between where the Bucks are as the number one seed and let's just say an NFL team getting the number one seed and getting all this time off. But you still, again, I run into the situation where, comparatively speaking to the NFL, you can't convince me that all this time off for one team that has a higher seed is now playing a team that has kept playing and has been literally fighting for their lives and kept in their routine and kept in their motions, and both those teams now play. I'm almost inclined to say that the team that's the lower seed that's kept playing is going to give you a game because you haven't been doing anything.
Well, you know what it is?
You've been practicing,
yeah.
But you can't simulate what's been going on.
You know what it is? It's why every single year now, it seems, in the NCAA tournament, whoever plays in the first four is going to win a game.
Because they've played
because
more.
They not only, especially if it's like, and that's why, it's one of the reasons why I think we've seen a 16 seed win. Because those teams have had to fight for their lives to get into the tournament, right. And then they got to play in the first four to even get into the real tournament. So they've already got a game under their belt. They're in that mode. They're in that mindset. I think it's a little easier for them to come in. I think that was the case with Miami. They played on Tuesday. They lost. They had to win on Friday, and then they play again 2 days later on Sunday. It was more, they were more in a rhythm. Now, like Barkley said before the game, if you lose, it's too much rest. If you win, the rest was good for us. You know, it is what it is. Yep. But I think it did hurt the Bucks a little bit yesterday. I really do. And even if you look at a team like Boston, you know, the Bucks sat everybody the last two regular season games, and then they had a full week off. Well, Boston still had to get the two seed. Philadelphia was still on their ass until I think the last game. So they had to play a little bit longer, and they knew they were playing Atlanta on Tuesday. It's weird that it's a disadvantage actually to be the one seed coming out of the play-in because you're the last team to actually know who you're playing. It doesn't seem right. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the fix is, but it doesn't seem right. But all that being said, none of those excuse why the Bucks came out the way that they did. I thought they came out with no energy. I thought they acted as if it was a regular season game. I don't know why that is. if you want to blame Budenholzer, fine. My take on it is you're a professional athlete. If you need your 60-year-old, slightly balding coach to fire you up for a playoff game, maybe you shouldn't be there. But it was Miami's best game of the year. They shot, like you said, they shot 60% from the field. They shot 60% from three. They were the worst three-point shooting team in the league. They were the lowest scoring team in the league at 109. They ended up with 130. The Bucks had their worst three-point shooting game of the season yesterday. They lost their best player in the middle of the game. You know, Miami lost Tyler Hero. That sucks, but he's not. They didn't lose Jimmy Butler. If they'd have lost Jimmy Butler, it would have been a different story. From everything I've read and heard today, I believe Giannis will at least give it a go Wednesday night. I think he'll play. This guy fucking bent his leg like Gumby 2 years ago, and he played a week later in the finals. Like, I know, dude, anybody that's ever played, I mean, shit, you didn't play a lot of basketball.
Nope.
But you've played enough. Anybody that's played basketball for any significant amount of time, you've fallen like Giannis fell.
For
sure. We've all had that fall, and it hurts for a couple days. I was very concerned of like a cracked tailbone. We were texting about that.
Man.
That's really your concern on that fall. You're not going to break your back.
Right.
So I think he will play Wednesday. And if he does, the Bucks will win. And I don't think Miami will win another game. I really don't.
Okay.
The Bucks were awful yesterday.
Right. And the Heat were really good.
And the
good.
Heat were really good.
So you were
and that was a game with 3 minutes left.
Right.
Jimmy Butler was awesome.
What was the regular season series split?
Well, it was 2-2, but nobody played.
Oh, okay.
Like, Giannis only played in one game, and I think...
Did they play two in a row down there and then two in a row up here?
Yep, and Giannis didn't play either game.
Gotcha.
Middleton didn't play either game. Jimmy Butler might have played one or two games. So you almost got to throw that out. I don't know. Lopez was awful. Javon Carter gave you nothing. Matthews and Crowder, not much. Joe Ingles was all right. Grayson Allen, not much.
It's good that Middleton missed all that time and came back.
Middleton looked great. Drew was pretty good, although, you know, when Giannis is out, he kind of got to score a little bit more. But he did have 15 assists, so you can't really bitch there. Portis was great. I'm sitting there watching the game, and I'm like, Brooke don't have it tonight. Just put fucking Bobby in. Like, some nights, Brooke Lopez is 35 years old. He's 7'2". He some nights ain't going to have it. I mean, when he's shooting threes and hitting the bottom corner of the backboard, and Miami has figured out that when he shoots long threes, we're going to release a guy. They got four baskets off of cherry picking.
Hollett's Holiday's post-game comment said that.
Yeah, that's unexcusable. That's
said they got him for that.
That's between the ears stuff. Mm-hmm. That's not any scheming. So, No minutes out of Connaughton, and we talked about him a couple weeks ago with his shot, but your perimeter defense thing, and we saw this a couple weeks ago when they played the Celtics, and I brought it up.
Yeah, didn't they knock down a ton of threes?
And I do. If I have one concern with the Bucks, it is this: they cannot guard the top flight wings in the East. And that is Tatum, Brown, and Jimmy Butler. And possibly Donovan Mitchell if they end up playing Cleveland next round. You know, they've brought in these guys. They've got Wes Matthews. You've got Crowder. You've got Ingles. But those guys are all in their 30s. Like, they're still good players, but they're not what they were 3 years ago, any of them. And, you know, Jimmy Butler is a bulldog. He's a short Giannis. He don't stop. And he's going to keep coming at you all game long. And I'm not sure the Bucks have the horses to stop him. And I'm really not sure they have the horses to stop Boston if those two, Tatum and Brown, get cooking. I think they're going to need Connaughton. I think they need his athleticism. He's not a great defender, but he's a great athlete. Wes Matthews at this point in his life, he's 36 years old. He's not the athlete that he used to be. Jay Crowder was never a great athlete. Joe Ingles is certainly not a great athlete. So you're at a deficit there. And, you know, I mean, shit, we watch enough basketball. All it takes is a little bit of dribble penetration. And all of a sudden, now Max Strus has got one extra half second to get his shot off from the top of the key. And Gabe Vincent now is wide open in the corner. And you're like, who the fuck are these guys? Well, they're NBA players and they're open.
Right.
That's what they are. And if the Bucks are going to continue to not be able to keep the ball out of the paint, this is going to be a problem for them. It might not get you this series, but down the road, as you play better teams, you got to watch out.
X-rays were negative last night. They had an MRI today. Giannis, that was fine. So Bud said that he's receiving treatment. You think he's confident, you're confident that he's going to play?
Yeah. Just everything we know and have about Giannis and have seen over the last couple of years, I will be very surprised if he doesn't play because it's a bruise, it's pain. He can't, unless he's got actual back spasms where his back locks up on him. That's different. But if it's just a bruise, if he's just playing through pain, he'll play. And even if he doesn't, the Bucks should still win. And the nice thing about it is, they don't play till Wednesday. So he's got today and tomorrow to rest. Then they play. And then they don't play again until Saturday. So you'll have Thursday and Friday again to rest. Mm-hmm. So to only have one game in a five-day span, even if they do decide to sit him, which it's risky. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to risk going down 0-2. But, I think the Bucks are still okay in this round.
You want anything else on the league in general? Or
I don't think so. I think that pretty much covers it. We got a Warrior King game tonight. Going to stay up and watch that. You'll be sawing logs.
I will be.
That'll be a fun one.
Okay. Just a minor college basketball stuff. Marquette had a guy that declared for the draft.
Omax, Omax Prosper.
I wasn't sure, and the article didn't say. I don't know. That was last week. I don't know if anything's come out since then. Is he keeping his status?
Yeah, he's just going through all the pre-draft process and just kind of seeing where he would fall. I mean, I saw him and Iguodaro, their center. He has not declared at all, but I just saw in some early mocks. You know, those guys are down in the late 40s, early 50s, so real back end of the second round and not worth coming out. Mm-hmm. I mean, Justin Lewis came out last year out of Marquette. He was their best player. Didn't get drafted. Ends up on the Bulls. Blows his knee out. I mean, you know, yeah, you want to get your money, but you can get money in college now.
Right.
So I would hope that both those guys are back.
Okay. Badgers got a couple of guys from the portal, guy from Wyoming, and also a guy from St. John's who was on the All-Big East freshman team. Mm-hmm. And we kind of ran over this with Wargel on Friday. He's kind of enthused about those pickups. Thinks it adds a little bit more shooting, a little bit more potential for scoring for them. You know, I don't know whether you read a whole lot about them or what that means, but, you know, with Wall coming back and now the addition of these guys, you know, you would think that the Badgers don't follow up last year with another year like they had. You would, conventional wisdom, say there's going to be improvement at least.
So who's not going to play?
It's a good question.
Because there's only five guys going to be on the floor.
Well, Davis already took off. I know, but he wasn't starting by the end of the year.
You've got Klesmet,
yep.
Hepburn, and Asijan all at this point returning. And now you've got two guys coming in who they're not coming to not play.
Right. Well, one's just a freshman, or he just was a freshman, so he's going to be a sophomore. I don't know what that – I think his name's Noah Reynolds from Wyoming. I don't know what year he is, but
I was surprised they went and got guards. Honestly, I thought they'd go for a little front court
big man.
Yeah.
Well, from what I read from Wargel, I think it was in the Badgers' loss and the scoring drought that they were on, because he was kind of singing to the tune of a big guy too for a long time. And I know that was kind of the consensus, but he kind of shifted and he kind of went, you know. Out of all these scoring droughts that we saw Wisconsin go through for the entire year, he goes, they might just go and get some guys that can put the ball in the bucket.
I get it. I get that. I do. But, man, you're going through the Big Ten.
I know.
You got to have some bulk size up front. Yep, and, nope. I mean, Tyler Wall's not even that big, and you saw how much it killed them when he got hurt. So, it's not over yet. They may still get somebody else, but I was a little surprised.
Well, they got to free up a scholarship. Wow. So, I mean, that's, I don't know how much, I don't know how much that's going to happen.
Rusty. Euchre just beefaroni down here. Oh, blew my shirt off. Holy Christ. Never even moved.
Oh, man. That's getting over here now. I'm going to have to
talk. Isn't that something?
I have to talk through my shirt. Oh, my God. Just that little
thing.
What'd you
do? Did you go eat a...
Holy cow.
Charlie Burger?
What'd you feed him?
Did you go to Jerry's?
Hormel Chili? Good Lord.
Wow.
Whew.
Anyway.
Back to reality.
Can't breathe.
So, yeah, no other real headlines in college basketball to speak of. Look at him. You guys talking about me?
Yeah. Shit break.
Brewers are on a West Coast road trip. They're through 7 games. They're 4-3. They got Seattle tonight. They took 3 out of 4 from the Padres. Little small ball. I was watching when they scored their run on Sunday, and Mitchell with that bunt, and then and these are the rules. And it was funny. I think it was on the TV broadcast. Whoever was calling the game with the Levering went, what just happened?
Oh, Vinny.
Yeah, yeah. He just immediately just went, what did we just have here? Because like all this stuff, you can't really tell who's responsible for what and what the rule is, because there's a lot of things going between the pitcher and the batter with the counts and the engagement and the disengagement and who's got to be ready by the 8-second count for the batter. You got to deliver the ball. Well, it's the, I mean, it's, there's so much stuff in it. It wound up that Darvish had a disengagement thing, and then Mitchell swiped third and then a sac fly got him in. Only run of the game.
Yeah. Wade Miley shutting him down.
Darvish pitched really well. Miley pitched really well, too.
Yeah.
But 3 out of 4 in San Diego, I'll take that.
For sure. And San Diego's not whole yet. You know, they're still waiting to get some guys, especially Tatis, back in that lineup. I mean, Soto's only hitting about .170. But, yeah, to go in there and take 3 out of 4, that's nice, especially after dropping 2 of 3 to the Diamondbacks. Didn't have a great showing there.
They've started okay, though.
They're okay.
To Arizona's credit, okay. They've been crap for the last few years.
But, you know, Brewers 11-5, 2 up on the Cubs and the Pirates right now in the Central.
St. Louis has not had a good start to
the year. No, and neither have the Dodgers at 8-8. So, and Padres at 8-9 after this homestand versus the Brewers. So, still obviously so freaking early. You can't really make much out of any of this, but it is nice to see... stylistically, at least, the shift with the Brewers.
Mm-hmm.
Taking advantage of their speed and, you know, just kind of playing a more entertaining brand of baseball, I think. And, you know, we talked about it earlier. The rookies have really infused the roster, it seems, with some energy. And and he's not a rookie, but I think Contreras has been a huge upgrade over Narvaez. Huge. Miley's been really good in his 2 starts. Burns has been mostly good. Sucks that Woodruff's on the DL.
Yeah, no kidding.
IL, whatever.
Still think of it as the DL.
Hopefully that's just a short stint. I mean, inflammation of the elbow, I believe, right? Isn't that what it was?
Didn't know if it was shoulder or elbow. But
you never like to hear that. Nope. And Woody's a guy that you want to see him good and healthy, and I hope he's around for a long time at the Brewers. But my dad came into work this morning, and he just says to me, I think the guy that pitched in the top of the 9th is still better than the guy that pitched in the bottom of the 9th.
Oh,
I said, yeah, I think that's fair. I do think Josh Hader is still better than Devin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
People, you couldn't afford Hader.
Yeah,
you could have figured it out for one more year. You could have figured it out.
That's right.
But, you know, Devin Williams, my dad called him. He goes, he's going to be K-Rod. And I said, I think you're right. I think every 9th inning with this dude is going to be an adventure.
Just a swipe
box. I think there's going to be guys on. I mean, even yesterday, he loads them up. He goes full count, 2 outs, bottom 9. And dumbass Grisham's trying for a walk. It's like, swing the bat, dude. Like, just as a general baseball fan, just swing the bat, dude. You can't
leave the bat on your shoulder.
Come on. Because all you were going to do was tie it with the walk. Like, try to win the damn game. But, yeah, I have a feeling that the Devin Williams experience might be a little hairy for some fans that get easily stressed at the end of these games.
Going to my first game on Saturday, the Red Sox.
Nice.
Are in town. So we're starting.
Going with your cousin?
Yeah. Michael and his family.
I think we went the last time they were.
Yeah, because we had the O'Leary. Michael came up, and didn't we have the O'Leary's there with us?
And one of the O'Leary's went down and sat with front row Amy and scared the dog shit out of her for three innings. Remember that?
That was Jim.
Yeah. She's like looking around like, who the fuck is this guy? How did he get down here?
He just got up and went down there. God, that was glorious.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're all going on Saturday. That's going to be both families. You're hoping for a little bit better weather. We were looking a couple of days ago. It was only 10%. Now it's up to like 40% chance for rain. But we're hoping to do some tailgate. We'll see. At least they're going to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
I'm going to try to get over there at the end of the month. They play the Angels.
Oh, sure.
And I'd like to I'm not going to figure out until I see the pitching lineup. I'd love to see Ohtani pitch.
Right.
I think that'd be fun. There ain't a lot of guys anymore that get me to go to a baseball game, but him, obviously it'd be fun to see Trout get a couple at bats, but to watch Ohtani pitch would be pretty cool.
Now, has something changed in the way that the schedule is where we're having more interleague games?
Yeah, you play the division less.
We've started four straight series of interleague because it's the Mariners, the Tigers, the Red Sox, and then I think it's the Angels.
I don't know if it's more interleague, but I know it's less division games. So I'm not sure if it was spread out throughout everybody else in the league or not, you know what I mean, with your schedule. I don't know if they play the Mets more than they did, but I did hear that. Well, which I like because
do you like it? Okay.
Yeah, because it's, be my next question. If you're in a division like last year, the Phillies make the wild card, but they're in a division with the Nationals and the Marlins, and like neither one of those teams are trying to win. Same thing in the Brewer division. The Pirates and the Reds are not trying to win. So, you know, if you're third place, you're the Giants in the NL West, and you're looking up at the Dodgers and the Padres, but you're like, well, we have a really good team, but the fucking Phillies get to play Washington 19 times. And I think Philadelphia beat them like 16 times. They just demolished them. It's not really equitable.
No, it's not.
You know, and
no, I wouldn't mind a little more parity in the schedule at least.
Yeah,
you know, a little more balance.
I'm not an interleague fan. I think it takes away from the All-Star experience, and I think it takes away from the World Series. You'll never convince me otherwise. Keep your ratings. I don't care. More people watch TV than they used to. That's not really a barometer for me.
Okay,
for the fan experience, one of the reasons why the All-Star game was way more interesting when we were younger than it is now is because we wanted to see Randy Johnson pitch against Barry Bonds when Randy was on the Mariners and Bonds was in the NL.
Because you never get to see
it. We wanted to see Greg Maddux face Griffey. But now you can see that on a Tuesday night in May. I just think that that's taken away. So, whatever. That's just my little soapbox.
That's fine. You got anything else for baseball? You got anything else in general? I know we're a little bit shy of the 1 hour, but we don't have a rundown.
So, unfortunately, the Brewer streak to open the season got tied, right? Not broken?
Correct.
By the Tampa Bay Rays at 13. It was the Brewers and one other team I can't remember,
now
the Rays. I was happy to see that they did not get broken.
By the Tampa Bay Rays?
Because the 87 Brewers is on the short list for me of my favorite teams of all time.
Hallowed ground. Absolutely. Around here, for sure.
Yep.
And it really bothers me when a team does that nobody has any general interest in. If it was a storied franchise or a team that sells out and it's like really expecting big things or whatever, but it's like, it's Tampa Bay.
Well, I'll tell you what, not to plug another podcast, I will.
Okay.
If you're a big baseball fan, do yourself a favor, and it's probably a week and a half old. Ryan Russillo had Theo Epstein on his pod for about an hour. And I thought it was fascinating listening to Theo Epstein talk about baseball and some of the changes they've made and why they've made them. And frankly, his part in kind of fucking the game up with Billy Beane and some of these guys 20 years ago when they all turned into metric nerds and how by doing that, it became a home run or nothing league, and I think he said something like in 2000, the average hitter was around 270, and last year they were around 230. It's just not good baseball. It's just not what it's supposed to be about. But if you got an hour, go back and listen to that. It's really interesting. And,
Where is Theo and what is he doing now?
He's working in the commissioner's office.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people think he very well may one day be the commissioner.
Okay.
He hinted in there that he would probably like to get back onto a team at some point. But that doesn't close out being a commissioner someday. Very smart, obviously very good at what he did. But I gained a lot of respect listening to him talk and take a little responsibility for some of the reasons why we had to do what we're doing this year with the game. And, he talked about how, when we were growing up, on daily sports talk radio, it was all about baseball, and now you turn sports talk radio on and nobody talks about baseball, and that shouldn't be. Baseball plays every day. You talk about fucking Dak. He even used it. He goes, you talk about Dak Prescott for 5 days during the week between games. He's like, nothing's happened. He goes, in the meantime, we might have a guy who hit 7 home runs in 4 games, and nobody's talking about it, and that's a shame. And as most of us are, especially in our age bracket that are big baseball fans, you'd like to see that come back. So, like I said, if anybody's got some time, want to listen to that, it's really good. It's really interesting.
All right, that's the Russillo podcast. Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm the Ringer.
Okay.
Send me something, Simmons.
Briefly on the high school circuit, we started our baseball broadcast season we talked about at the top about an hour ago. We're 5 games in. We've covered Craig and Parker twice. Covered Milton twice, and then we covered Craig and Beloit Memorial.
Have you made it through 5 innings?
Yes, but only because the Milton Sun Prairie East game got called after 6 on account of darkness because they didn't have lights on their field.
Okay,
but that would have gone 7.
Okay, so all right.
Realistically, and then I think because Coach Agnew, and I don't have any this confirmed. I haven't texted him because I figured he was pretty mad. I heard after that game he called his team in for a Saturday morning 6 a.m. practice, which they didn't play very well against Sun Prairie East. That opening broadcast against Monroe, I was shocked at how bad the Cheesemakers were, because they generally have a couple of athletes here and there that can do some stuff. They were not good, and I didn't think Milton was. I mean, they're the defending Division I champs, but they lost a lot. They still have some guys like we talked about before we started rolling. They still have some dudes with experience on that roster, but they're not expected to be anything like they were last year. But Milton just made them look silly, and I was going to be shocked if Monroe even won a game this year. I saw they just won one this weekend. They split with Broadhead Jude and doubleheader, but Craig and Parker a combined 34-2. That's not fun.
Woof.
It's not fun. I've seen, and next time I talk to Coach Shear, we're not covering him for another week, I'm going to ask him if his players' bruises have healed. They've been hit by more pitches this year in the 2 games by Parker and in Beloit Memorial than I've ever seen in my life. And granted, they're not high-velocity stuff, but some of these guys were hit in consecutive at-bats, and some of them were hit 3 times in a series. And it's like, good Lord.
Like crowding the plate or just bad pitching?
Bad pitching.
Yeah.
Bad pitching, Craig's getting good looks at the plate, Parker's got some athletes, They got some guys that can play.
Well, yeah, half their basketball team's on their baseball team.
But they get runners in scoring position. They can't push them across. They get defensive plays. They get an opportunity to be made, and there's an error. And stuff just starts to snowball. You know what I mean? And they can't get out of their own way sometimes.
Yeah, the amount of errors I've seen just from reading the articles in the paper and some of these games that Craig has played have been unbelievable.
Craig doesn't need any help
scoring
runs. The other teams have helped them immensely, and Craig's just taking it.
Walks, hit by pitches, and errors. Like, yep. You're not winning.
Aiden Schenck hit a grand slam, his second at bat in the first inning when they put 9 up on Beloit Memorial in the first inning on Saturday. I'm not sure that's landed yet. Right off the bat, it was just a monstrosity of a blast. Craig's got a ton of good players. Milton's got some good players. Parker's got some good players. I want to see some more competitive games. They're supposed to do Parker and Madison Memorial on Tuesday. I don't think that's going to get played because it's still, you know, winter outside. Thursday doesn't look good. It's supposed to rain. So it doesn't look like we're going to get to do games until next week. But Parker played Memorial tight up there and lost. They're supposed to play Sun Prairie East. We saw them against Milton, but I don't think we're going to get to see that. But
how'd they do against Melton?
Who's that, Parker? I think they still they're playing in the middle of the season. One thing that's cool, Milton added a game with Beloit Turner. They played last year at ABC Supply. They're going to do that again.
Oh, that's cool.
So we're going to do that next Friday. Bear and I are going to go down to the stadium and sit where the big radio guy does the Sky Carp game. So we're going to do that. And when I was talking to Coach Agnew, he's taken them to AmFam Field. The last couple of years, he didn't get a chance to do that, but he's going to try to do that. They make you your team sell a number of Brewer tickets for a game for a couple games throughout the season. You have to sell X amount of dollars worth, and they used to not be allowed to sell Cub games. The last time they did that, they were allowed to, and everybody bought up the allotment in one day.
Sure.
So I don't know what that's going to be like going forward, but just kind of having, like you and I when we went to the Fiserv when none of the equipment worked and we were kicked around by the Fox Sports broadcast crew. But, you know, doing a game in that big a venue.
Yeah, that's cool.
That would be awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm hoping that's at least a year or two down the road or something like that. But, yeah, it's been off to a little bit of a weird start with all the lopsided games, whether it be Milton, whether it be Craig. So,
well, it's funny. I was thinking about it. It's like, you know, Craig's got a very good team and he'll probably make the state tournament and has a chance to win state. But you might see three games worth of shit all year. Versus when we're doing basketball, none of the teams we're covering are going to state and they're not going to win state. But I would say the majority of their games were pretty competitive outside of, you know, some of the Parker girls games.
Right.
Where they were a little overmatched. But I would say for the most part, they were competitive. I don't know what's better. Just following a team that slaughters everybody or competitive games?
You had told me, like, this isn't any fun and it's, you know, it's an embarrassing for the other teams. And it is probably on that
end. It's not Craig's fault.
No, it's not. They're just showing up playing.
When you beat the shit out of everybody, it's like, get better. I don't know what you want me to do.
And I will say, for the first couple of times when we saw Milton beat, I think they beat Monroe 15-0. I can't even remember. Maybe it was 12-0. But, like, when you want an intra-city game, you want a game.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not fun.
No.
And then when they just put one on Beloit Memorial, 9 in the first inning, you're like, okay, here we go again. There's 19-1, and it's like, you know, by the end of the game, and no offense to the kids, it's like, I'm just bored.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's exciting to see all these runs come across, but it'd be more exciting if they're hitting doubles, they're hitting triples, they're hitting home runs. They're getting walks and hit by pitches. The other team's committing errors. Craig's not even showing up and needing to swing the bat.
Well, it's like if you're watching a Little League game and you're just like, once it's 10-0, like, I don't care if it gets to, I don't want it to get to 20-0. It's 10-0. The game's over.
End the game.
Right. So when it was 12-1, you didn't need to see another 7 runs. You're like, just let's call it.
That's it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the girls softball, I think, has a 15-run rule or maybe a 20-run rule after 3 innings.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether baseball is going to.
3 innings is awful short.
Right.
Yeah, that's awful short.
Softball, I don't know why they have that. And you and I were just talking about a shot clock, a whole thing, and I got this during our podcast. As much as I don't want to bring his name up, I will. You had listened to Bears chat with Craig Athletic Director Ben McCormick, and the shot clock was brought up, and you said that Ben was very knowledgeable and very much in favor of passing that.
As am I.
So I got a text from Parker basketball coach Matt Bredesen where he said the shot clock passed the WIAA advisory committee vote. And now it goes to membership votes. And there was one gentleman who had proposed using it for D1 and D2 boys only.
Okay. Like a trial period type
right.
thing.
Right. And so I don't know where it goes from here. But I think you and I are both, we've seen the product on the floor and what it looks like and what we think could be improved with the addition of that.
Yeah.
And now it looks like at least there's maybe a little jumping off point to this.
You just don't want to see the end of these games turn into a game of keep away. I just don't think anybody wants to see that. The kids don't want to play that way, and nobody wants to watch it. So at that point, what are you doing?
That's a good
idea. I mean, that's all you need to say for a reason why they should have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So I don't know. You know, I haven't texted Matt back because you and I are doing the thing, but I will be curious to see where this goes now, and whether maybe we're, what would Ben say? He thinks that it'll happen within...
But then he said he thought 4 or 5 years, so...
You know, and you said that Oregon, when they upgraded some stuff, they bought hoops and stanchions with shot clocks built in. They just haven't turned them on.
Yep.
So maybe that's what we're going to start to get, and maybe we'll play some exhibition games or something, and we'll try some stuff out, some non-conference stuff, and see how it goes.
I just really want him to implement the shot clock because I want you to have one more thing to worry about during the game.
I'm not doing enough.
I just want you to... I just can't wait till the shot clock goes off and you're looking down and you don't know who had the ball or that it, you think it was like the end of the half and it was just the shot clock.
What's the buzzer?
Is the horn going to sound different than the regular horn?
Why is there time left on the clock? What's happening?
And I'll just sit there and just look at you and thank not you. Even help.
I'll sound like Milo. What just happened? Who scored that? Why is the buzzer? Yeah, that's probably what I'll devolve into.
I love it.
You're
that's,
right.
That's what we're here for.
All right, that is an unscripted hour of the intentional foul. Good to be back. We'll put something together next week for NFL draft. I've got Lauren on the hook. He's going to join us for a little bear talk.
Sweet.
I'm going to try to hit up Wildy for CLO for next week. Thinks what he, you know what he thinks the Packers are going to do. So first round is next Thursday. We'll try and get a pod done by then. So until then, this is the Intentional Foul. Thank you for listening and downloading. Please subscribe and please tell your friends. I'm Josh.
I'm Dan.
We'll talk to you next week.
Get healthy, Giannis.